Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Crime and Crime Again is a true crime podcast containing subject matter that may be graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Born on April 29, 1991, to parents Eldon and Dawn, Madison Geraldine Scott grew up in Vanderhoof, a town of about 4,500 people located in central British Columbia, Canada. She was raised alongside her older brother Ben and younger sister Georgia. Known to family and friends as Maddie, she was bright and vivacious, and had a large circle of friends that loved her dearly. Maddie was an outdoor enthusiast. She loved camping, dirt biking, horseback riding, and she loved sports like hockey, figure skating, and various water sports. She was also incredibly creative. She loved photography and even making funny videos and short films with her friends. She co-wrote and starred in a homemade suspense thriller called The Stalker. Maddie has been described by family and friends as witty, outgoing, and absolutely hilarious. Just a warm, loving person that you would be proud to call your friend. Maddie graduated from Nechaco Valley Secondary School in 2009, and she then went on to work as an apprentice heavy-duty mechanic in the logging industry alongside her father, Eldon. On May 27, 2011, 20-year-old Maddie was preparing for an overnight camping trip at a party with a friend named Jordy, who she had recently reconnected with. Maddie and Jordy went to high school together and were in the same circle of friends, but after graduation, they didn't interact at all. They didn't reconnect until May 2011, a few weeks before the party. The party was going to be at Hogsback Lake, an area surrounded by dense woods and dotted with recreational campsites. The lake is about 25 kilometers, or 15 miles, south of Maddie's hometown of Vanderhoof. That day, before heading out to the lake, Maddie made a couple of stops in town to buy snacks and then to buy drinks for the party. She also ended up getting a case of beer and one bottle of wine. That evening, Maddie and Jordy arrived at Hogsback Lake with their tent and overnight bags, ready to get set up. But when they tried pitching the tent, they realized that it was too small. They pulled out the other tent they had, but quickly realized that they were missing the poles for that tent. So the girls made the 20-minute drive back to Vanderhoof and stopped at Maddie's house. Maddie's mother, Dawn, recalled seeing Maddie at the house around 9:30 p.m. on May 27, 2011. She grabbed the things that she needed, said goodbye to her mother, and left. That was the very last time that Dawn saw her daughter. According to Jordy, when she and Maddie arrived back at the campsite, they pitched their tent and then went off with some other girls to gather firewood. Once everything was set up, and as more people began to arrive, everyone started drinking. Now, this is where the story starts to get a bit muddled. According to Jordy, Maddie went into her tent around 10 p.m. and basically stayed there for the duration of the party. However, this account seems off. If Maddie's mother saw her at their house at 9:30 that night, and then they made the 20-minute drive back to Hogsback Lake, set up their tent, and got started with the festivities, how could Maddie have been cozied up in her tent at 10 p.m., or even 11 p.m.? Maddie's mother, Dawn, confirmed that she was texting Maddie at 11:30 p.m. that night, and that Maddie received a call from a guy she knew around 12:30 a.m., while she was still at the party. But that is thought to be the last activity on Maddie's phone. It was also confirmed by Dawn that at the party, Maddie had told a guy that she liked him, but he told her he just wanted to be friends. According to Dawn, Maddie was upset about it, but not to a dramatic level. Perhaps that was the reason that Maddie spent most of the night in her tent. There was another guy at the party who showed interest in Maddie, but when she turned him down, he was a bit miffed about the rejection. However, he apparently got over it quickly, and it wasn't a big deal. As the night went on, more people began to show up, until there were around 50 people attending the party in total. Toward the tail end of the night, according to Jordy, a few quote-unquote rowdy people showed up that no one at the party was familiar with. These unnamed rowdy people allegedly instigated a fight at the party, during which Jordy was in a bad spot as she got knocked into the campfire and injured her knee. Jordy had actually met up with a guy at the party who she had just started dating or casually seeing. After she was knocked into the campfire, Jordy said she and her new boyfriend decided to leave, despite the fact that Jordy was supposed to be camping overnight with Maddie. According to Jordy, her decision to leave the party instead of camping as she originally planned was a combination of having injured herself and being, as she described, quote-unquote, super drunk. Maddie pleaded with Jordy to stay overnight with her in the tent, but Jordy opted to leave the party with her boyfriend. Jordy recalled leaving the party around 1 a.m., although Maddie's family's website states that Jordy left the party at around 2:30 a.m. Another thing to note is that, according to Jordy, when she left the party that night, there were only about 5 people still there. It's unclear whether she included Maddie in this number. In the CBS documentary that covered Maddie's case, the camera panned over a whiteboard in Dawn and Eldon Scott's basement. The whiteboard is a collection of notes and questions pertaining to Maddie's case. Most importantly, on that board, Dawn and Eldon have a written list of everyone who attended that party, and they wrote down what time each of those people said they arrived to and left the party. Now, we can't see the entire whiteboard or all of the names on it in that documentary, but from what we can see, it shows that Jordy reportedly left the party closer to 1:30 a.m. However, notably also written on that whiteboard, someone else who was at the party that night remembers Jordy leaving around 2:45 a.m., which also aligns closely with the information on Maddie's family website. That is a more than 1 hour discrepancy. Perhaps it's the result of heavy drinking and poor memory, but regardless, it's important to note. There are several contradicting statements in this case regarding the timeline. Jordy stated that when she left the party, Maddie was in bed, in her tent, and that there were only about 5 people left at the party when she went home. According to other partygoers, the last physical sighting of Maddie at the campsite was between 2:45 and 3 a.m. People did claim that they offered Maddie a ride home, but according to accounts of people there, Maddie declined their offers and wanted to stay in her tent. Shortly after that, everyone else left the campsite and Maddie was left in the woods, completely alone. It's also important to note that, as far as I was able to find, the only person who was at that party that has offered public statements about the events that night is Jordy. That said, according to investigators, they were able to track down everyone who attended the party and all attendees have been cooperative in their investigation. The next morning, sometime around 10 a.m., Jordy returned to the campsite to help Maddie pack up. She admitted that she was also feeling a bit guilty for leaving Maddie alone at the party. But when Jordy arrived at the site, Maddie was nowhere to be found. Jordy recalled the tent being left open. The opening was not tied or zipped closed. When she looked inside the tent, Maddie's blankets appeared to have been pushed to the side, and her rings were scattered around on the ground. Here we find yet another discrepancy. Jordy told CBS that she found Maddie's rings on the ground on Saturday morning, and that it struck her as unusual because Maddie never took off her rings. But according to Dawn Scott's statement to John Lorden on his YouTube channel, Dawn believes the rings weren't found until Sunday, and she remembers Jordy finding them and handing them to someone else. Not only that, but Dawn also commented that Maddie was prone to leaving her jewelry laying around everywhere for her mom to stumble upon, meaning that maybe it wasn't so unusual for Maddie's rings to be scattered on the ground. After allegedly finding the jewelry on the ground, Jordy then looked inside Maddie's truck, unable to open the door because it was locked and the keys were missing. All of Maddie's belongings were still in the truck, untouched. But still, Maddie was nowhere to be seen. Interestingly, Jordy did not try to text or call Maddie upon realizing that she was missing from the campsite. Or at least, in her statements, she never said that she tried to text or call her. Jordy also did not contact Maddie's family to let them know what she had discovered. While Jordy was at the campsite that morning, she did take the time to get into the tent and grab her sleeping bag and her favorite pillow to take home. As far as we know, she arrived at the campsite, saw Maddie's belongings, but could not locate Maddie. She grabbed her pillow and sleeping bag, and then she just left.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shortly after Jordy left that Saturday morning, the host of the party the night before arrived back at the campsite to clean up any leftover mess. He also recalled seeing Maddie's tent and truck, but did not see Maddie anywhere. According to him, when he saw Maddie's tent, it was closed, so he assumed that Maddie was inside the tent asleep. Now remember, Jordy stated that when she arrived earlier that morning, the tent was wide open. It's possible that she simply closed it back up after retrieving her pillow and sleeping bag. Meanwhile, Eldon and Dawn Scott were feeling a creeping sense of concern, as they hadn't heard from Maddie since the day before. But because Maddie was 20 years old, and she was a reliable, responsible adult, they didn't think much of it, and they went about their day, expecting to see Maddie back at home later on. Later that night, another party was held at the same exact campsite. Maddie's truck and tent were still at the site during this party. Maddie's younger sister, Georgia, who was 15 years old at the time, was actually at that second party. And she did see Maddie's truck and tent there, but she didn't think anything of it, likely assuming that Maddie had gone home with another friend the night before. This second party, on the night of May 28, 2011, hosted an entirely different crowd than the party the night before that Maddie had attended. This party reached upwards of 150 people. Sometime during the night, a teenage boy jumped on Maddie's abandoned tent and flattened it. He was later questioned by police, but it's unclear what his motive was. It's likely that he was just intoxicated and simply being unruly. May 28th came and went, and no one had heard from or seen Maddie since the night before. On the morning of Sunday, May 29th, 2011, Maddie's parents felt a sense of panic setting in. They had not heard from Maddie in almost 48 hours, and she never came back home. They tried calling her, but her phone went straight to voicemail. At that point, they decided that they needed to drive out to Hogsback Lake to find out what was going on. When they arrived at the campsite, they found Maddie's white 1990s model Ford F-150 and her two-toned blue tent sitting abandoned. Her tent was flattened, and Maddie was nowhere to be seen. They happened to have Maddie's spare keys with them, so they were able to unlock the truck. Inside, they found Maddie's backpack and purse, along with a few other random items. They investigated the tent as well, but ultimately, they did not locate Maddie's phone or truck keys. Nor did they find Maddie. There happened to be some other campers at the site that morning, and as it turned out, they knew Maddie. But when Eldon and Dawn spoke to these campers, they stated that they had not seen Maddie at all since they arrived at the site. At that point, Dawn called the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, or the RCMP, and reported her daughter missing. This is truly one of those cases where investigators came in full force and put everything they had into their search. Immediately, a search was launched for Maddie that very day, May 29th, 2011. The very first search consisted of more than 100 people, conducting grid searches on foot, with ATVs, and there were even searches conducted by air. Hogsback Lake itself was also searched for any sign of Maddie, but ultimately, the lake was completely cleared and nothing was found. As the extensive search efforts pressed on, investigators began tracking down and interviewing everyone who had attended the party on the night of May 27, 2011. They also tracked down and questioned everyone who attended the second party on the night of May 28th. According to investigators, multiple polygraph tests were conducted with attendees of both parties, and as far as we know, everyone who took a polygraph was cleared. In July 2011, 2 months after Maddie disappeared, her family posted a $15,000 reward for information leading to Maddie's whereabouts. In September 2011, that reward was increased to $25,000. And by May 2012, 1 year after Maddie disappeared, the reward for information was increased to $100,000. But the months turned into years, and despite countless searches for Maddie in and around the lake, inside of abandoned structures near the lake, and along Highway 16, which leads directly to Hogsback Lake, not a single trace of Maddie was found. For 12 years, Maddie's family agonized over her disappearance, over not having any answers as to what happened to their daughter at that lake. They were forced to endure unfathomable levels of uncertainty and pain for more than a decade, hoping, dreaming, that someday Maddie might walk through their front door. But everything took a breathtaking turn when on May 29th, 2023, 12 years to the day after Madison Scott was reported missing, the RCMP announced that her remains had been found on a rural property about 18 kilometers, or 11 miles, away from Hogsback Lake where she was last seen. Investigators discovered her remains while executing a search warrant on the property. But unfortunately, there has been absolutely no further information released after Maddie's remains were found. Beyond the positive identification of her remains, we know absolutely nothing. We don't know what tipped off investigators to search the property where she was found. We don't know what their preliminary findings are as to whether she was there for 12 years or if she was moved. And we don't know if they have determined a cause of death. The lack of information following the discovery of Maddie's remains has perpetuated more than a decade of speculation and theorizing amongst online communities. Over the years, many theories have been presented and discussed, but one thing that most people seem to agree on is that Maddie Scott either got into or was forcibly put into a vehicle at Hogsback Lake after the party had died down. There is no other logical explanation as to how she ended up 11 miles away from her campsite. What we don't know is whether she willingly got into the car or if she was lured or forced into the car. And if she got into the car willingly, under what pretense did she enter the vehicle? Did she know the driver of the car? Was she intoxicated and in need of a ride somewhere? Was it a man that she had been talking to online? There are countless questions to be answered. It seems most likely that the perpetrator was either one of the very last people to leave the party, or it was someone who waited to show up until the early hours of the morning when everyone else was gone, and Maddie was left alone in her tent. And that once again begs the question, could it have been someone that Maddie knew personally and was in communication with? Could she have texted or called someone to ask for a ride home after everyone else had left the party? Or was there a predator lurking in the woods near Hogsback Lake that weekend? While there is so much about Maddie's case that we just don't know, there is one thing that can be said with certainty. Someone knows what happened that night. Someone knows how Maddie left her campsite. Someone knows how she ended up on a farm 11 miles away from where she was last seen. There is still a $100,000 reward for information leading to an arrest and the laying of charges. Please visit and follow the Justice for Maddie Facebook page, where Maddie's family is very active in posting information and updates. On the Facebook page, Maddie's family recently posted a statement that read, quote, "The significance of this year is that it is approaching 1 year since her remains were discovered. While finding Maddie has yielded some relief, it has since generated many other questions that remain unsolved. It is challenging to comprehend the varying emotions that we experienced at that time. Once again, the community was there to stabilize our family as we processed the unexpected information. We are forever grateful for the ongoing love and support we have had over the last 13 years. We are unwavering in our belief that justice will be obtained." End quote. If you have any information on the disappearance and murder of Madison Scott, please contact the RCMP at 778-290-5291 or 1-877-543-4822 or call Crime Stoppers anonymously at 1-800-222-8477. If you'd like to request a case to be covered on the show, you'll find a link to a case request form in the show notes. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, where you'll find full episodes, complete with photos relevant to each case. You can follow the podcast on X, formerly Twitter, at Crime Again Pod, on Instagram at Crime Again Podcast, and on TikTok at Crime Again Podcast. Links to all social media can be found in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of Crime and Crime Again.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.